The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order.
This is the Zabe Cast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. Thursday, June 11, 2026. Thank you for downloading and thank you as well for the positive feedback after I recorded late on Monday night. Stayed up until 1 a.m., waited for the basketball game to end so I could have fresh analysis and reaction. I am not doing the same this time around. I'll be going to bed shortly after the game goes final. I'm going to enjoy the game, absorb it as well as I can, and then I'll get to it the following day with Scott and Solly, and you subscribers and the one percenters will get to hear it on Friday's edition of the Zabecast. Part of my regret is that despite staying up until 1 a.m., despite giving it what I thought was a earnest effort to take a lot of notes and come up with certain angles to understand, okay, here's what I saw, here's what I liked, here's what I didn't like, some things were unavailable to me even at midnight. I had not yet heard Mike Brown's lament against the referees, and it was the most gentle of rants against the referees in which he said, look, I'm not saying we don't foul, and I'm not saying that the Spurs didn't play better, but 24-8 in the fourth quarter. Come on, man. Should be an ESPN segment. Come on, man. It was a huge disparity. Now, I would say if you were to look at it closely and be honest, the true discrepancy of probably actionable fouls was closer to 20-12, but still in favor of the Spurs, because the Knicks with Brunson know their Achilles heel is when they body up shrimpy little Brunson, he just will dribble the air out of the basketball. And they will have bad possession after bad possession. This is basically what got them run out of the series last year in the Eastern Conference Finals against Indiana and Halliburton. So I think that's part of it. The larger issue and the one that troubles me the most is, of course, the Wembanyama shove on Brunson. And it bothers me on a couple of fronts. Of course, the NBA had a chance to review it and upgrade it to a flagrant one or even a flagrant two. And that flagrant designation, because Wemby already has one from earlier in the series, would knock him out of game four. And they just weren't going to do that. So shortly yesterday after taping with Charge, it came down quietly. There'll be no further action from the NBA's office, according to what our reports say about the Wembanyama foul. Here's what bothers me. In the old school ways, this would have been taken care of. This would have been handled. Nick Wright, I think, makes a great point about it because Brunson had kept his cool on this. He says, if he had run up on Wemby, this is Nick Wright tweeting, If he ran up on Wemby, the refs would have called a snap tech on Jalen, reviewed the play, and then 100% they would have given Wemby a flagrant as well. This is an excellent point. They would have forced them to look at it and go, okay, hold on a second. We gave a T for, little Shrimpy Brunson shoving the big alien in the chest and starting a brouhaha, but we can't not give Wemby his own flagrant, or at least his own technical, because he kind of started it. Instead, Brunson was a pro, writes Nick Wright, and Wemby gets to completely skate on it. Doesn't seem right to me. No, it's not right at all. And it's also not how this league used to operate. I would love for the league to be back to the days in which maybe not having full-on brawls. I'm not advocating for that. But a player who got shoved like that 30 years ago would have immediately reacted and got right in the face and started shoving and wrestling with the guy who had shoved him. And then the benches would clear. There'd be a big gathering and would take a while to pry everybody off. Hopefully no punches would be thrown, because that's the next level that you don't ultimately want to go to, but sometimes it gets there. But that's how it used to be handled. You wouldn't stand for it. Instead, Brunson seemed acutely aware that A, Wemby was going to be allowed to do that, B, that he would be the one that ends up getting the worst of it if he were to retaliate, and then, of course, C, his teammates would not have been able to have his back fully because of the draconian come-off-the-bench rules instituted by David Stern, which are not being followed as closely by Adam Silver and company. Now, Stephon Marbury, great Nick, great former Nick, went a step further. Here is what Marbury had to say about, okay, if this is how it's going to be, here's how I would like to see it go down.
Let me tell you something about Wemby. Wemby is an international player. Okay, they play dirty overseas, just so you know. We're not used to playing dirty in America the way how Wemby just now threw Jalen Brunson. Now, if I'm watching film and I see Wemby throw somebody on my team, if he throws somebody like that, the next game, I'm gonna pop him in his rib cage so hard with my elbow that he's gonna fall and drop to the ground, and he's gonna wish he never put his hands on me. Okay? So next game, I guarantee you, after y'all watch that film, what he did to Jalen Brunson, you better know that whenever he get on a basketball court, you better make sure you better put that knife in his neck.
Whoa.
All right?
Whoa, easy on that language.
That's where it's at. You see what he did when he came in? He said he was going to come in, he was going to win game two. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. All right? So make sure y'all take note, and next game, you make sure you bring that same energy. All right?
Watch this play. This is what frustrated Brunson. Oh, whoa.
So, the potentially incendiary language aside, Marbury's right. That if not Brunson himself, there used to be guys called goons. And they weren't just limited to hockey. They were also involved in the NBA. Again, I don't want the league to be a brawling league. I don't want to be like the movie Semi-Pro, or back when Kermit Washington nearly killed Rudy Tomjanovich with a sucker punch to the face that collapsed his entire facial structure like a Fabergé egg. But this was not basketball. Kyle Davis on Twitter says, neither Spurs players got called for a foul here. LOL. In many shots of the Wemby shove of Brunson, they cut out the shot of Cat getting mauled himself by, who is that that's doing the mauling right there? Johnson. So as I watch this, I'm thinking, it's crazy that the referees can see all this happening and all three of them swallow their whistle. It tells me that they've been instructed. And it troubles me that the league is instructing its referees on specific things they do and do not want called, because the referees are not blind and they're not idiots. They're seeing all this action go on, but they are choosing, probably by way of league mandate, to not call anything. And so I looked here on the Keldon Johnson shove of Cat, and it looks pretty bad opposite the free throw lane where Brunson's about to get shoved down by Wemby. If you look closely here, you see the orange wristband of Karl Anthony Towns. And you can see what he's doing with his left hand. He is clutching and pinning the left arm of Johnson against him. And so this is a common tactic. He's using, Cat is then using his off arm, his right arm, to kind of flail about like, hey, I'm being pushed. And he's leaning his head back. And he also, right here in this frame, pulls his off arm around Johnson, makes sure his head goes back so it looks bad. Karl Anthony Towns is a lot bigger than Keldon Johnson. If he wanted to stand his ground, he could. But this is all part of the game. This is what I mean when I say contact farming. And Brunson himself, was he in a legal guarding position here on Wemby? Yeah, probably. But what was he doing? Was he taking a guarding stance and putting his hands up? No. He just parked himself basically on Wemby's dick. And Wemby got frustrated and said, get off me. And the rest was, well, what you saw. But this right here, this is not the beautiful game Dr. Naismith had envisioned. Total number of free throws in the first three games of the finals: San Antonio 84, New York 61. This despite the Knicks averaging more drives per game, 54 versus 52, and more shots in the paint in the non-restricted area. Spurs have 155 drives, 22 free throw attempts. Knicks have 162, which have led to just 6 free throw attempts. That is getting to be a bit troubling of a disparity. Also, there was the closeout by Wemby on Hart in the corner, in which he threw his ginormous alien feet right under the landing zone of Josh Hart. Hart's right foot actually came down. Let me go ahead and put this up as well. Hart's right foot came up. Share screen. Here we go. All right. So here he is on the closeout. You're going to hear the audio. Let me take the audio out here. Okay. And he exaggeratedly puts his left foot into the landing zone of Hart for the corner three. He also kind of drags his right foot, his trail foot, into the picture as well. Maybe that was normal, maybe not, but you can see him. Okay, right there. Hart's foot lands on Wemby. What does Hart do that was a disastrous mistake, unfortunately, in today's NBA? He didn't sell it. He didn't fall down and writhe around in agony, which would have gotten a call. Hits the three and just bounces off of the trail leg of Wemby. You fall down on those and you pretend like you've been murdered, you get calls. And Wemby would have been given a flagrant because that's how they've written the rules, and Wemby would have been gone for a game. It sucks to say this, but playing the game is necessary. Playing the foul game, being a manipulator, a flopper, a content farmer, is unfortunately where the league currently lives, and it's where you can win, and it's almost not optional to not do it. Now let's switch gears. Getting paid. I'm all in favor of it. In this business, media, it's hard to get paid. And you want to get not only paid for what you feel is a fair amount and what you're worth and what value you deliver to your company, but sometimes it's okay to get overpaid. It's okay to leverage how some entity really, really wants you, so they're going to pay you way too much money. Headline: Pat McAfee in negotiations to get paid $60 million a year by ESPN. Wow. As I wrote on Twitter, two thoughts here. Number one, good for Pat. He bet on himself and it's coming home in spades. I'll never forget when he retired from the NFL and he joined Barstool Sports. I'm like, what an idiot. Milk that NFL job for a couple more years. You're making like $1.2 million a year. Well, he knew what he was doing, and he's delivered it all the way to this mountaintop. Good for him. But point number two was, does ESPN even remotely care about competitive bidding for talent? Because who is coming in, if the number turns out to be 60, who is coming in at 59 that had to be beaten? You know, it wasn't Fox Sports, that's for sure. You know, NBC is already up to its eyeballs in an NBA deal that it frankly overpaid for, and it knows it. Who is coming for McAfee at $59 million that you're like, ah, we got him. Here he goes, $60 million a year. Now, people have replied to me in my Twitter comments with, well, I'm sure Netflix would. I'm sure Paramount was probably in the mix. Maybe. To do what exactly? Well, he could do a show over there. Okay. Look at what McAfee would lose if he were to take that money from another platform. He would lose, obviously, College Game Day, the most valuable square of real estate on ESPN, highest profile. It is the encompassment of his whole brand as a guy who knows ball and loves ball with his crew of guys, go to the big games and hang out at the tailgates. I mean, that's it. That's the McAfee experience right there. He'd lose out on that, number one. And number two, he's on ESPN every day. That's incredible exposure. To me, the platform, ESPN, is still the biggest platform in sports. And the platform makes the stars as much as the other way around. Could he have gotten something close or a whole lot more from a Netflix or other entity like that? Yeah, sure. But he'd be giving up the keys to the Disney kingdom. And so I just wonder if he's making 25 a year now, and it depends on whether that number is fully encompassing of all the costs of the show and the seven other guys who are in front of a microphone as part of the show, as cast members, and all the travel and all the sets and all the cost of booking guys like paying Aaron Rodgers $1 million a year to come on the show. That was the reported number. The field goal contest, which I still believe cannot be real, the money he's claiming to give away, but I don't know how he does it or claims to do it. Does that $60 million encompass all those costs, or is that just Pat's own salary? Either way, it's a huge number, and I don't know who ESPN thought was going to come steal him. Because if he's making 25, you do a new deal for 35 and say, bro, because that's the language he understands, bro, it's a hell of a deal. $35 million a year. And we're ESPN. And you know what? If you go to Netflix for $36 million a year, congratulations. You're on Netflix now. People will start going, what happened to McAfee? Where is he at these days? Oh, I got to log on, huh? Yeah, I don't subscribe to Netflix. When is he on? What? I don't understand. When you're on ESPN, you are right in everyone's faces. You're on every airport television, bar television, health club television, every Applebee's, Chili's, you name it. There's value in that. But shit, good for McAfee. On the other end of the spectrum, this from David Hyde, longtime columnist at the Florida Sun Sentinel. He tweets, my 36-year run at the Sun Sentinel is over. Laid off for the first time since I lost my job as an ice rink skate guard at 17. Cost-cutting move back then, they said too. I'm a month from 65, so please keep any sympathy for my newspaper friends who didn't make it to the finish line. Yeah, I'm a little bit torn on this. On the one hand, I'm sure he's making a really nice number. Newspapers are dying, much like radio is dying. I get it. On the other hand, if you have a job like this, and you've been at it 36 years, and you're 64 years old, you're going to do it until you're 94 if you can. And at some point, the newspaper has to say, look, we got to turn the page to a new generation for at least whatever's left of the newspaper business. Ed Werder, who knows a thing or two about this, said, further evidence of managerial incompetence in media, how does a paper survive determining its best writer is unaffordable, even when he's not soliciting other offers. I get his point. Affordable, yes, but at some point, they all come for you. And then there's Charles Barkley. Barkley got off a good zinger the other night during the halftime show by Cardi B. Ever heard of her? Cardi B. Her one of her best songs, and I made sure to tell my mom about this. I said, "Wet Ass Pussy, Mom. You got to check out Wet Ass Pussy. That's a really good song." That's Megan Thee Stallion, you moron. Is it really? How do I tell them apart? Aren't they both ex-strippers? Okay. Cardi B was doing a show. She had, of course, a very revealing bustier on. And Ernie said, "There's Cardi B." And Charles Barkley said, "No, those are Cardi D's, as in D-size boobies." Here was Barkley with Dan Patrick saying, not only did he not care about getting in trouble for saying that, which he would not have gotten in trouble, but he actually said he's hoping they fire him.
Cardi D's? Did you? I mean, it's good analysis.
Didn't look like B's to me, Dan. It looked like D's to me.
Does anybody say anything to you? When's the last time management or somebody said, "Chuck, can't say that"?
Dan, you know, I'm hoping they fire me. you know, I got six or seven years left on my contract that they know I got no chance of doing. I would love for them to fire me and have to pay me for the next 6 or 7 years. So, you know, I was talking to my agent. I was like, "What can I do to get fired where they have to pay me for the whole 6, 7 years?"
Yeah.
And I says, "Yeah, I would love to get fired. I'm not going to lie." Yeah, but because like I say, there's zero chance I'm going to be working the next 6, 7 years. Zero. So I know if they fire me, they would have to pay me all those years. And I heard through the grapevine that I make great money, so thank goodness for that. But yeah, they, come on, man. People can't take a joke. They can kiss my ass. You know, I said the same thing. If people don't like me, I appreciate and love all the support I've gotten all these years. But anybody think everybody likes them, they're a fool. So if people don't like me or don't have a sense of humor, they can kiss my ass, and my whole ass, not just one cheek, the whole ass.
That ass is a lot smaller than it used to be.
It is. That's the only reason. That's the only thing I hate, being skinny now. When I tell people to kiss my ass, it's a lot smaller.
Now that's Barkley's brand right there. The extreme level of, I don't care. And maybe I'm just sensitive because, you know, I'm still not yet back to being working and earning a salary. So maybe I'm just a little sensitive here, but what a shitty take. What a shitty attitude. I won't be working the next 6 or 7 years, I guarantee it. So why'd you sign the deal? Sign a 2-year deal. You know the world's going to go on without you, Charles. And you are kind of funny and kind of witty, and you're sort of like America's beloved knucklehead. But wow. To think that you're making $21 million a year to do a smattering of shows in which you are one of four people and don't have to do any prep, research, don't have to carry the show, don't even have to get it in and out of breaks, $21 million. You have all summer off because the NBA season ends right about now. And you're bragging about how I'm definitely not going to work the rest of these years and I'm hoping to get fired to get paid? Okay. Cool. Cool, bro. I really like you. That's awesome, Charles. Brandon Ayuk is another guy that thinks this money is easy and is never going to end. Oh boy, he going to find out. He will not have Charles Barkley's comfortable retirement money of $21 million a year to do a little TV show a couple times a week. Brandon Ayuk of the Niners, still property of the Niners, they've not released him, went to Instagram again, and he keeps on not helping himself on Instagram. He said, "You know why they really mad though?" Meaning the Niners. "They mad because they stupid. They mad because they paid me $50 million in 8 months and then voided my guarantees for 2027. And I'm about to be on a new team in 2026. They mad at themselves." Oh. And to think there are Commander fans that I have heard from that are still to this minute, actively interested in adding this clown shoe to the team. Really? I would ask yourself, what makes you think he's going to be some great addition? It's just breathtaking. The money in sports has gotten completely nuts. Here's Mr. Ayuk himself.
And another thing, you want to know why they really mad, though? They mad because they stupid. They dumb.
Stupid.
They mad that they paid me $50 million in 8 months. And they avoided my guarantees for 2027. And I'm about to be on a new team in 2027. They mad at they sales for real. Niggas acting like they mad at me, but they stupid ass mad at they self.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Doesn't exactly make you feel warm and fuzzy about being a sports fan. Coming up, our guy Gil Alexander of VSiN. You are listening to the Zabecast. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, crap, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart. Get paid. All right, good to get out to Vegas. Gil Alexander has picked up the phone today. That's his mistake from VSiN and a numbers game podcast. Gilly boy, how we doing, buddy?
How you doing, man? What a mistake to pick up the phone.
What a mistake. Never pick up the phone when I call. I might want to talk to you and put you on a podcast, and now you're working for me. What a fucking hockey series we got cooking. 2-2, heading back to Carolina. Last night was again bonkers. Early big lead by Carolina. Vegas comes storming back. A goal at the end of the second that looked like it might have beaten the decimal point, but didn't. And then a game-winning goal off the back. Who scored it for Carolina falling down? Just chipped it
Jordan
in back.
Jordan Staal.
Oh, my God. Have you gone to any of the games? Now, you're a Caps fan, but I'm sure you pulled for the Golden Knights. Did you go to any of the games?
I went to a Western Conference final game, but I did not go to either of the two finals games. No,
okay. Has it been a hot ticket in town?
Oh, my God. You know, I always say the Raiders are the adopted son. The Golden Knights are their biological son.
Yeah.
They love them both, but there's nothing like the Knights.
Right. And, of course, the now third son who's come to live with you, the stepson, the A's, are here for just a weekend, so to speak. And I want to get into that fantastic. And the ballpark and the scores so far. But back to the Vegas Golden Knights. So there's palpable buzz in town, I trust, for the Stanley Cup Finals.
Absolutely. Okay. Think about it. You mentioned the Caps. Let's just sort of compare. The Capitals have been in existence for 52 years. That's just our experience. That's just me and you. You can substitute any franchise here. But our Caps have been in existence for 52 years. They have been to two Stanley Cup finals. They have won once. This franchise, Steve, is touched by a higher force. 9 seasons of existence, 3 Stanley Cup finals. They're going for their second. It's amazing. They love this team.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, I had heard from hockey people that the original expansion rules were a bit too generous for the Knights, and so the next time around with the Kraken, they're like, yeah, we can't really let teams that are coming in get that many good assets right away.
Yeah, it was similar, but there were some differences ultimately, and they'll never let that happen again. Though I will say this, that's a narrative that was valid for a while. The truth is, though, that this franchise, Mark Stone became available, they got him. Yeah. Jack Eichel became available, they got him. Yeah. Mitch Marner became available, they got him. So, I mean, you really have to give them credit after all this time as well.
Who's the owner?
Is George McPhee, I believe is his name. George McPhee?
No, he's the GM. Who's the owner of the Knights?
Oh, that's oh boy, this gentleman's his name is escaping me now, but he's a
but he spends the reason that, Bill
oh,
Foley
he spends. Bill Foley, that's right. Bill Foley, who is, you know, the Golden Knights name was because of his love and adoration of the military. So yeah. It's
He also owns a bunch of international soccer clubs, so he's had some experience when it comes to, you know, sports and who's worth getting and maybe who's not worth getting. So the Marner acquisition was a major sign and trade with the Leafs, and they gave Marner an 8-year, $96 million deal, which in hockey terms is huge. They gave up center Nicholas Roy to get him. Marner being the beloved hometown boy of the Maple Leafs, the cursed franchise, one of the original six, who has not been to a Stanley Cup in forever. And they have to sit there, if they're hockey fans up north, and watch their boy just do great things for you guys out in the desert. It's got to kill him, Gil. It's got to kill him.
It's got to kill him. They haven't won a cup since 1967. And Marner has now scored more goals in this one playoff for the Golden Knights than he did in entire postseason history with the Maple Leafs. It's,
good times in Vegas on that front. As to the A's, tell me about this rinky-dink stadium they're playing in. And does it shock you that the first game between them and the Brewers was like 25-24, I think?
Close, very close. 15-14, there.
Sorry.
29 runs, 34 hits, 11 homers, the longest of which was Shea Langelier's 483-yard bomb, 83-foot bomb.
Right.
In the first inning. It's the Aviator Stadium. The Las Vegas Aviators are the AAA affiliate of the Athletics. It's in Summerlin, which is west of the city, a really beautiful enclave west of the city. That is not, of course, where the Athletics themselves are slated to play once they arrive in Vegas later part of this decade. That will be right on the strip on the corner of Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard, where the old Tropicana Hotel used to be. But this ballpark, I mean, you know how it is here. The temperature is 100 degrees. The ball flies, and it's, you know, for a 10,000-seat stadium, it's just such a great thing to be at. It's just such a great, great atmosphere. And they were up against the Knights the other night, and people at the ballpark said they were thrilled to be there. There were some people were like, we'd rather be here than at the Knights game. It was that much fun for folks. Wow. Yeah.
I think we talked about this when I was out there in March, and you were like, I'm not sure baseball's going to really hit here in Vegas.
Yeah.
Are you changing your mind on that?
I am not. I am not. I still hold to that. And the theory, just to sort of reiterate, is, you know, it's one thing if obviously the Knights are a big success. If your local franchise is coming to Vegas, you make it a destination trip for you and your buddies. Same thing. Obviously with football and the Raiders. I think if a basketball team ever came here, same sort of deal. If you're from Philly, oh, look, the Sixers are in town. Let's all go to Vegas. Baseball's a different animal, as you know. It's three game sets in the middle of summer, and I don't care that it's a covered stadium. It's still as hot as you know what out here. And so I don't know. I mean, maybe you do it once. You disagree with me, and you could be right.
Well,
right?
Here's the only reason. A good friend who you know, Eric Gitter, is out there as we speak right now. He planned this because his boy's a big Brewer fan. And not only did, you know, he get a ticket to one of the games, because they're going to go to one game at this dinky ballpark, he said he bought tickets for all three of the games to make sure they had the option to get the one they wanted. And then he resold the other two back on the website.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. So he made a deal of it. Now, eventually that could wear off. As far as being adopted, you know, the Athletics have been so historically bad, but they have been quietly assembling some really good players. And this kid, Nick Kurtz, who baseball fans know already, hit a home run so hard and so deep off a 99-mile-an-hour fastball up and in that Murph, the manager for the Brewers, said, I couldn't believe it, 99 up and in, and he murdered it. And if you knew it was coming, you couldn't get your bat around on it, and he did. He said, I don't think we're going to pitch to him ever again. Don't you think stars like Nick Kurtz could actually get the locals excited about the Athletics at some point?
I, I absolutely do. It's a fair point. And by the way, just to inject some betting into this.
Oh, yes.
Nick Kurtz, 8-1 AL MVP in a world where Aaron Judge is on the outs for 4 to 6 weeks. That is not a terrible wager to make.
I love it. Do you have a piece of that?
I do have a little piece of that.
Nice. You got a little slice of it. By the way, catch Gil on VSiN every day. What time to what time?
It's called The Numbers Game. We do it every day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific.
And the podcast is Beating the Book.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Get it wherever you get your podcast. All right, let's get to the main meal. And this is really the reason I called you, is about the Brendan Sorsby situation.
Oh my God.
So, all right. So it's more of an NCAA and legal story than it is a gambling story because, hey, how about that? He gambled on sports. We know how that works. But I would imagine you being immersed in the gambling community have probably had a lot of interesting discussions about, holy shit, this guy was gambling on a ton of stuff, a ton of bets, and how many other players are doing the same right now, despite the leagues and the teams' efforts to stop them from doing so?
Well, that point is the one that I think we all have in the back of our heads, like, okay, he can't be the only one, right? How widespread is this? Now, in his case, for those who missed the details, $90,000 in wagers, 40 different bets on Indiana when he played for the Hoosiers. The golden rule, right? We know this from Pete Rose. This is the one rule you cannot break in any sport. You cannot do this. This, I believe it was Dan Wolkin from ESPN.com. I want to give him credit for this line where he said the NCAA was not only correct in ruling him ineligible for this, it was their obligation to do so. And there is simply, see, there's no gray area here. The fact that a judge in Texas, who's from Fort Worth, it should be noted, the fact that he issued this injunction and is allowing Brendan Sorsby to play football, two-game suspension, but is allowed to play football next year, as we stand right now as we record this, is one of the most unbelievable, outrageous decisions ever. And even those of us who are immersed in the gambling community, if you will, we are not degenerate. Have nothing if you don't have the integrity of the game.
Right.
And so this is just mind-boggling. Nobody saw this coming two mornings ago. It's incredible. And the real interesting part about this is I did get into, you know, after going through the story, we had lawyers on air talking about this. They're flabbergasted. But then my producer, Kelly, says afterwards, he goes, let me ask you a stupid question. Shouldn't, like, Texas Tech do the right thing and just say he can't play? And I sort of said to him, you know, I said, well, they should. But the next comment was, do you really trust college football crazy institutions to do the right thing? I mean, that's the incredible part about it. And I don't know if you heard, they're not scheduled this year, but Georgia's athletic director, Kansas State's athletic director, they're like, we're never scheduling this team anymore this is going to happen.
They've been told by the ADs, don't schedule Texas Tech in anything. I don't know how real that actually is. And like you said, all that matters is truly football in terms of scheduling, and they're not on the schedule immediately. It could be bluster, but obviously a lot of people are pissed off. Now, what's crazy is that, yes, he played 10 games, appeared in 10 games, 7 starts during his 2023 redshirt season before transferring to Cincinnati. Do we know if Sorsby bet on the Hoosiers when he was actually in uniform?
I don't know about that.
Okay.
But I don't know about that. But here's, you know, here's the thing. The problem is, now that you know this stuff, right, you go back to certain games of his at Cincinnati. And let me point you to a game. Now, do I know that he was betting on these games specifically? I don't. But the fact that I don't is kind of the point, because Arizona, 5.5-point favorite against Cincinnati in 2025. The teams combined, let's see, 30-24 was the final score. Arizona just covers. Sorsby had two picks, one on the first play of the game at the Cincinnati 25, another in the second quarter on the Cincinnati 30. Those two turnovers led to 10 points. There's another game in 2024. Cincinnati was a 5.5-point favorite against West Virginia. The over, the total, I should say, was 54.5. Guess what? 55 points were scored.
Interesting.
In a 31-24 West Virginia win. Sorsby threw a pick six, Steve. He threw a fumble backwards pass kind of thing that was returned for a touchdown.
I did not know this. So, okay, hold on. Did you suspect this at the time? Or
no,
is this a retro? Not. So this is a retroactive dive into going, let's That's take correct. A look here. And was this That's your correct. Work? Or I'm sure a ton of people out there for VSIN, other entities are like, okay, now we're going to get the microscope out for his games at Cincinnati.
Let me give credit to Matt Hayes at USA Today for doing the deep dive on some of these games. And yes, these were all retroactive. Nobody suspected it at the time. Why would we?
Do they know his position on those games, gambling-wise? Has that been documented?
Well, somebody better do a cross-check real quick, because otherwise everybody's going to pick apart all this stuff.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if they've got proof of it. I do know this. I did put into the old Google search that Sorsby didn't actually bet on any of the 10 games that he played in, but when he was redshirting, he definitely bet. He bet 40 bets involving Hoosier football. They were on the team's overall performance or opposing players, but he did not bet technically against them, which also doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, that's the thing. Because there's doubt, and we all know how gamblers are. Let me raise my hand. Sometimes you don't gamble. If you reach a limit on what you're allowed to bet, you seek alternative ways of getting action down. I'm just saying there's too much smoke for this not to be a suspicious thing. And let me just say again, we don't know if this is a direct line. We don't know if this is cause and effect. But it does allow for people now to deep dive into this stuff and to say to themselves, how in the hell can an academic institution of higher learning allow this to go on? And so, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
The courts have said to the NCAA, for now, you are not allowed to prevent him from being eligible. You are not allowed, according to this injunction. The appeal has been conveniently set, and this is the expedited appeal because the courts move slow, for February 8th, Gil. After the season is already over, and long since when Sorsby's going to be headed to the pros, we assume. So there's no relief.
That's correct.
There. And the judges who said, yeah, it'd be really mean if you didn't let them play, they're probably going to get flipped like a pancake at the next appellate level, and nothing's going to happen to them. They're not going to have to worry about getting recalled. These are elected judges, by the way. So they know where the bread is buttered. It's dirty, dirty, dirty. And for those who say, well, I doubt Sorsby would throw a game for money, bullshit. There was just four Alabama State men's basketball players who threw a game for $2,000 amongst four guys. That's $500. And they're like, sure, I'm down for it.
Thank you for doing that math. That is $500.
I had to get out my calculator and my slide rule for that, but still.
Well, there's two other things have to be stated. One, in the judge's injunction, in his ruling, the judge stated that from a mental health perspective, it would not be right of the NCAA to in any way damage his recovery from addiction. Yes. So there's that, which is, of course, a generational issue that some of us older guys and some of the younger generations bring up. You know how that goes. And the other and the final thing which needs to be said, I think, is if he can do that, bet on his team, the team he plays for, whether redshirted or not, 40 times and get away with it, as you said, with appeal only happening after he's gone. What can anybody else do, even a fraction of that, and get away with?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. We're sitting here right now and talking about this, and until they figure out a way to let somebody wear the ref stripes in college sports, and that used to be the NCAA. You can say what you want about them, and they were far from perfect, but somebody had to be the ref with a whistle and the striped shirt to say, okay, here are the fucking rules. Then until we get somebody with the shirt on, we're going to have complete chaos, which is what we got now.
Bingo.
Which means you better gamble carefully. One last thing on FIFA, because I know that the World Cup is here. This is a event that is sprawling now with more games, more teams, bigger bracket, got 104 matches. And usually whenever there's a lot of something, all you need to find is the one or two little wildebeest babies that are slow amongst the herd as the pack of gambling wolves circle in. So you can peel off the one or two little sickly ones for an easy meal. Do you or others in Vegas feel like with 104 matches involving such great countries like Cape Verde, there are some weak little wildebeest babies to bet on in the next 3 weeks?
I also said Cape Verde, and I was quickly told it was Cape Verde. Let me just say that.
Oh, no, Cape Verde.
I was scolded.
Okay.
If I'm understanding your question, are you looking for
what
looking
I'm saying
for a little
is
bet here?
What I'm saying is, you know, you guys are in the business of gambling and analyzing and saying, here's a smart bet, here's a dumb bet. We've got a flood of games, and whenever there's more of something, it's harder for the sharps to really get their eye on stuff, and they may lose track of a game or two that the public might be like, "Who? Hold on a second. I think they're missing how good Uruguay is or can."
Right.
Is that the dynamic in soccer? Soccer is already a pretty shitty sport to bet because the totals are so low, and it's one goal here, one goal there. Penalty kick is like a free goal. But people bet on soccer a lot. It's a big handle, especially elsewhere in the world. What is your guys at VSiN thought about the World Cup?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword answer to that because on the one hand, you're right. There are bets, right? Morocco to win Group C, which is the Brazil group, right?
Yeah.
Traditionally, Brazil would always be the lock to win their group. But Morocco at plus 350 is a very popular bet. The United States, if we can apply golf terminology to it, par for the United States would be the round of 16, I think is the consensus.
I would hope that's like a birdie. I think we've never been past 16.
Well, I'm just telling you what the soccer folks are saying.
Okay.
But the double-edged sword of the answer to the question, though, is because of the very thing that you said, because this format is now, to use the Yiddish term, fakakta. In a way that it never was. It was a beautiful thing. They had 32 teams. It was perfectly set up to just advance the top two teams in every group, and it was this pretty little concise thing. Now you have 12 groups of four where eight of the 12 third-place teams get in. And so because of that leeway, it does create a bit of a gambling problem now in the group stage. Maybe not so much afterwards, but in the group stage, because you really don't know as much about the incentive on some of these teams if they've already locked up spots, right? And then it becomes a seeding jockeying thing. So that becomes a little more tough to wrap your arms around. So that's the one concern about the group stage anyway.
Yeah, nobody knows how that's going to play out because the incentive structure on how much do you want to win once you've locked up the spot is unknown. Obviously, I bet federations have, you know, simulated, gamified concepts of, okay, if we win our first match and we draw the second one, are we as good as we need to be? And can we lay down and rest a bunch of guys in the third one? So if you are going to be wagering on the World Cup, definitely watch and listen to VSiN and the guys out there, and also be very careful. Keep your head on a swivel and read all the scenarios because it's going to be very dicey. Quick correction, the U.S. has made the final eight once, actually twice. 2002, we got to the final eight, lost to Germany 1-0. So that was a good run, 2002. And we made the semis, the top four in 1930.
2002, people will remember as the Landon Donovan year. That's what they will remember about
1930. The reason the reason we made 1930's Final Four in the World Cup, it was only there was no round of 16 or quarters. We directly advanced from group play to the semis and were eliminated by Argentina. The first World Cup was played in Uruguay in 1930. So our resume is a bit thin in that regard, but should be fun. Should be fun.
Should be fun.
What else is shaking out there in Vegas?
It's really the Vegas Golden Knights and everything else. I mean, you hit on it at the beginning. It's really what the story is. That's what everybody's excited about. Although I did sense the air coming out of the collective balloon last night when that empty netter clinched it for Carolina.
Oh, that was bad.
Felt like folks were, it's like the magic carpet ride may have ended.
Come on. We'll see. 2-2.
It's hockey.
It's 2-2. No.
You don't have to tell me. I'm just telling you what these people feel. Yeah. It's been an unbelievable team that didn't do much in the regular season. And now at one point in this playoffs, didn't look like they'd lose to anybody. So we'll see. Best of three, de facto now.
Month and a half away from training camps in the NFL opening. Fernando Mendoza Mania, probably going to start. He's filed to trademark the Mando Fernando Lorian, I think, and already Disney is threatening to sue him for that. So,
oh no, expect Kirk Cousins to start opening day, though. I think that'll happen.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Gil, always a pleasure. Thank you for picking up the phone. You've made your mistake this time. I'm sure you'll just put me to voicemail next time. But anytime you want me on your show, I will avail myself to you, my friend.
Oh, you shouldn't have told me that. I know. It's going to come.
I play home and homes, though, with my fellow media members. I play home and homes, always. I don't shun anyone.
I appreciate it. You will be getting a call soon, then.
All right, very good. Thank you, Gil.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, let's end on this when it comes to FIFA. We know they're straight-up gangsters, right? You know that. Get a load of this. Joe Pampliano of the Sports Business Daily, I think he still works for that. Sports plus business, join 135,000 others who read my 3X Newsly weekly newsletter. All right, so maybe he's doing his own newsletter. Covers the world of sports and business, does so very well. Joe Pampliano says the World Cup ticket sales have been a flat-out disaster. FIFA held back tickets to create artificial scarcity, then launched their own resale platform with a 15% fee for both buyers and sellers. Fucking gangsters, I told you. And now there are still 180,000 tickets available for purchase. You can read the full story at huddleup.substack.com. That's huddleup.substack.com. Joe Pampliano doing a great job out there. Okay, I hope you enjoy the game tonight. Let's hope it's not a full-on WWE wrestling match, and we'll see how it stands coming out of Madison Square Garden, where Taylor Swift will apparently be in the building tonight. So she will be much more welcome than Trump was the other night. Fridays are for subscribers. You want to join us? It's $5 a month. It ain't much. It helps keep me going. I appreciate it very much. Go to zabe.com/premium to be a true one percenter, and then you get Monday through Friday ad-free on a separate feed. So you got that going for you, which is nice. Have yourself a crackerjack, absolutely spectacular Thursday. And as I like to say, we will see you next time. Like champagne and leather, like birds of a feather, we'll fly. Like rain on a sunny day, like $1 million that you're giving away. Like a stray dog on the freeway, we'll fly. Whoa. 'Cause we are like a team, living inside a dream. You and me doing a thing, and we'll The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.